Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking Season 6, Episode 8, Point and Shoot. Alexis, what did you think about this episode?
I thought it was extremely entertaining to see Lalo doing his thing one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And really, just everybody in this episode really was given 100%.
Oh, yeah.
It was really good. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was great. I thought the tension, even though we kind of already know, you know, basically how it works out, mm-hmm. and kind of how it was going to work out that way, too, with the gun that Gus hid and everything, there weren't any huge surprises.
Right.
But I felt it was super tense because of all the timing involved and everything, right? Like, there were several different groups of people and several threads going, and it was like, how is this all going to come together? And so, yeah, I found it very tense. Like you said, I found it extremely good on the acting side. I think a lot of these people, the Emmy nominations just came out recently, and a lot of these people have been nominated for Emmys.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
Yeah, well earned, I would say, especially in those opening scenes with Lalo and Kim and Jimmy. That stuff was great. But yeah, I really enjoyed this episode.
It was a hell of a way to come back from a break, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just to the point where I'm actually surprised that they didn't save this, you know?
Yeah, they could have spun it out a little bit longer, but...
And it feels like they've almost dealt with all business. Like, when I think back to Breaking Bad, I feel like there was still a lot of business going until the very last episode. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong about that? I know you recently watched the show again.
The last few episodes, things definitely slow down a little bit.
Okay.
In the sense that there's really only one major plot point we're trying to follow. At that point, I don't know how much I actually want to spoil that, but...
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so maybe it is more like Breaking Bad than I remembered. But yeah, there just doesn't seem a lot to do in the next, what, 6 episodes?
Close the book on Lalo.
7?
Lalo and Gus. Their fight, so.
Yeah, and I guess, like, maybe Hector is still, you know, still spoiling for a fight with Gus, but he has nothing to fight with.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his cousins, but we know kind of how that goes, too. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Kim and Jimmy is obviously still a question mark, right? How do they end this series? So we've got quite a few episodes to deal with that, but they got to do more. It makes me wonder... There are a few things, actually, that make me wonder if maybe we'll get more Gene than we thought.
Hmm.
Even though we were speculating, well, we might get a whole episode of Gene. we might get several. I don't know. One of the things is the intro of this episode is very black and white. Like, all the color is gone from what used to be a very colorful intro, and it's been degrading and degrading.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And to me, that signifies, like, oh, this is Gene. Right.
Yeah.
Like, his stuff is all shot in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a thing at the end, and I don't know if this is on the end of every version of this episode, but where we watched it on Amazon Prime, there's a little, it's just a shot, honestly, of mm-hmm. Saul's office. And over it, there is the lines, essentially, one day we'll wake up and realize we haven't thought about these events at all. And they'll be sort of, you know, in our past.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all in black and white, too. And I'm starting to think, like, maybe there's going to be more Gene stuff than we thought.
That would be really interesting. Because I do think, in terms of present day stuff, other than dealing with Kim and Jimmy's guilt mm-hmm. over what has just happened, doesn't seem like there are a lot of dots to connect between between the end of this and the beginning of Breaking Bad.
And they kind of dealt with all going business. So
all the cartel stuff, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess we are probably going to see Gus starting to finish the lab out.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll probably see that. We'll probably
now
see,
that he doesn't have to hide anymore.
I don't know. Juan Bolsa doing stuff. Maybe a little bit. Eladio.
Yeah. All those fools are still alive.
But, like, you could do... Everything that I think is still outstanding, you could do in an episode. Or maybe two, but we have like
five episodes left.
Five? Is it 13 episodes total? Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought we had like 6 or 7. But no, still,
we have five. I mean, still, it still feels pretty generous. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so interested to see.
I have faith that it won't be boring.
Right? Oh, no.
Whatever
absolutely.
They're going to do is going to be interesting at the least and maybe even exciting. So
I think so. A lot of people were saying that the show really needs to stick the landing, which you could say about most shows, but.
Right.
But yeah, definitely. We've been trying to build towards so much here. We need to see the end of these stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have faith in them to do that as well with
absolutely.
How well they did Breaking Bad's ending.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
For Prestige, me and Aaron are still extending our Shogun Afterglow with part 3 of our discussion of the 1980s TV miniseries. Last week absolutely shocked our sensibilities with Lord Toranaga doing the tango. What delights and horrors will await us this week?
Then for Pulp, this Friday join us for our latest prep session for House of the Dragon Season 2 as we take another look at the key differences between the text of Fire and Blood and the on-screen action for Season 1, and what they mean for the characters, story, and setting. Get your Valyrian steel sharpened for the new season.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So, our first teaser from coming back from the break finds us beachside with loafers drifting in the surf. The camera pulls back to reveal Howard's Jaguar with his wallet and wedding band stacked on the dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
How was the pace of this for you?
This was tolerable. This was tolerable. I like this.
I saw you getting a little twitchy at the very beginning with the beach.
Well,
the
I knew,
sand.
Right? I knew they're going to do this thing. And if it's going to be like, if it's not going to be information that I can actually parse, I don't know that I'm thrilled with it. But I could, right? I knew I saw the car. I knew even before they showed the license plate, like, oh, this is Howard's car.
Yeah, this is much more of a classic Breaking Bad-esque teaser.
I think so. Like,
there's
something
even,
bad has happened to someone. You know, we already knew that something bad happened to
yeah.
him, right?
But and like, there's a car with a door open with the keys still in the engine. This is not the first time that's happened either.
No, obviously they made it look like he had committed suicide.
He made
and,
it look like he walked into the fucking ocean, which I have considered doing many times, but wow.
This was the beyond the pale shit I was looking for, I guess. Like, getting Howard killed unintentionally is one thing, and that would have been beyond the pale, but then like bringing him all the way down, right? Like his reputation.
Yeah.
They wanted to ruin his reputation a little bit or get a little dirty.
Mm-hmm.
This is all the way down, right? Like,
well,
this is
because he can't come back from it. He's not alive to defend himself anymore. Yeah.
So this is, yeah, pretty bad.
It's terrible. And they didn't even get what they wanted to get out of it. I don't think.
Yeah. What's Cliff's reaction to this going to be?
Yeah, I guess we do. We do really have to settle up the Sandpiper stuff.
And she didn't go to that meeting, right? She turned around to help Jimmy.
She turned around
to
come back, yep.
Pretty sure that's going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, I don't know. Yeah, everything's up in the air now.
It's messy. Got so messy so fast.
And it might be the least of Kim's worries is whether or not she's going to have this public defender pro bono law firm or not.
No, she's much more concerned about someone dying under her watch. And also, she was very much about to kill somebody.
Oh, yeah.
For Jimmy.
Yeah. I can't wait to talk about that scene.
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
That's rough. All right. Our first scene picks up where Seven left off with the candle flame. Lala gives the pair some directions and heads out on his own.
That's okay.
A very
boy,
vague description of that scene.
That is the most vaguely that you could have described that scene. So there's so much here.
Yeah.
Let's maybe start with the idea, you know, Lalo says to Jimmy, hey, you're going to go to what we know as Gus's house and you're going to kill him and take a picture and come back. And he says, no, you should send Kim to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% certain if this is a noble sacrifice on his part or a cowardly weasel way out.
If it definitely feels like it could go either way, right?
Yeah.
Bit of column A, bit of column B.
I think they play it more as like a noble sacrifice.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he's putting himself in the room that he knows is dangerous as opposed to going to Gus's house, which might be dangerous, might not be. Especially if he shows up and Mike sees him, like, it's not going to be that dangerous. But also the idea of like having to kill somebody, I think, is like, is not something to be taken lightly. And yeah. I don't think the show ever does when it has innocent people or let's say like subordinate or weaker people kill people. It loves to do that, right? Like, mm-hmm. you think about Jesse going and killing Gale.
Yeah.
It really made a meal out of that. And I feel like it's a bigger thing than the show is making of it for someone to murder somebody in cold blood like that. And that's why I say, like, I don't know if making Kim go murder someone is helping her or hurting her.
Yeah, it's wild. And just the fact that he does not realize that he's actually sending her sort of into a worse situation in some ways.
Could be, certainly. I don't know that he's aware of the interaction she's had with Mike.
He's definitely not. I'm just saying right. That's like, he doesn't realize that he is kind of sending her straight into the lion's den.
Yeah, so he must think like, oh, this could be super dangerous. She could get killed there. And maybe
part of him is hoping that she will just kind of keep driving. Maybe mm-hmm. she won't even bother going.
Maybe, yeah. Then that would be a sacrifice, I think.
Yep.
But I like so much about this scene. Like I said, the acting is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Kim is...
Yeah, she's wow. doing the
she's
most
incredible.
In this
yeah,
scene,
she looks legit scared.
Yeah. And Jimmy looks scared, but like almost in a shock kind of way, right? He hasn't fully processed Howard mm-hmm. laying on the floor in front of them dead.
Yeah.
I love the touch that they're both in bare feet here.
Makes it so much worse. So much scarier. Yeah. Just the idea that like, you couldn't really run super effectively.
You couldn't run. Like, there's pooling blood all around you mm-hmm. that you might have to step in.
Oh, my God. When they have to, like, step over Howard to get to the couch. It's rough.
Yeah, something about putting them in bare feet there just makes it worse. Also, I have to look at their disgusting human feet.
Ugh. Man, you really don't like feet.
I really love the moving chair cam. Where they attach a camera to the chair as Lalo slides it up to Jimmy's butt. Unnecessary, but appreciated.
Yeah, just another weird shot to kind of put you out of your comfort zone. Just make you a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, and a flourish. There are a couple of flourishes in this episode, stylistically, that I really like.
Yeah, the directing was good in this. Very. The shooting.
Another little touch I like in this scene, when... you know, Lalo agrees to send Kim instead of Jimmy, and he, you know, they give her the keys, and she's on her way out, and he says, hey, put your shoes on, you might need those, and she does, and she's about to leave, and he says to her, a couple times in this scene calls her Mrs. Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a nice touch because it both kind of reminds you what Jimmy and her mean to each other, right? They're married at this point, and it's not her name,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's also like saying, in a way, because it's not his real name, it's like the pseudonym that's tied up in the underworld and all that. It's like kind of saying, hey, you guys made this mess together,
right?
You know,
you're not innocent of everything here.
And I don't know that Lalo is intending it to say that, but it does when I'm a viewer and I'm watching it.
Definitely. No, in terms of like tearing into them for ruining a man's life, basically, or trying to. I think Mike more than takes care of that later on. He gets his barbs in.
Yeah.
Toward the end.
Totally.
So, oh, yeah.
I have more on this scene.
Please do.
If you want to keep going on it. I agree with Lalo. A taupe Ford Taurus is a terrible car. And the worst possible color for a terrible car.
It's bad enough that it's a Ford Taurus, but making a taupe is just...
You really... there was a checkbox on the form that just said, fuck my shit up, and you checked it.
Yes.
The other thing I love is when Jimmy tries to get out of the chair. and he falls over, and he ends up face-to-face with Howard.
Yeah.
Which is... they do this shot every once in a while in Breaking Bad. I remember it when Gus's partner got killed, I think, in Breaking Bad.
Max.
And he was by the pool, and they had them kind of face-to-face in this position.
Yeah, with Don Hector's foot on his neck, making him look at Max. Yeah.
So I thought that was a nice touch there.
It was. It was a good echo. Get another sort of face-to-face body scene at the end, which is really, for as simple of a shot as it was very affecting to me. Yeah. Like, it kind of upset me. It actually upset me.
Yeah, they really, like, the state of Howard's body really went to shit.
It's rough, yeah.
I don't know what kind of vitamins and stuff he was taking when he was alive, but those just drained out of his body immediately when he died.
They did a good job with the... It had to have been an effect on his eyes. It made him look like he had, like, fish market eyes, basically.
Cloudy eyes. Ugh.
Yep.
Yeah, he hasn't been dead that long. He's been dead a few hours at that point, so I'm surprised he was as affected by death as he was at that moment. But what do I know? Maybe we have some undertakers. Maybe we have some coroners the crowd out there who can tell us, like, how realistic it is for the body to look like Howard's did a few hours after death.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely share that information with us. That is something that we want to hear.
I guess. I don't know.
Are you quite finished, sir? Quite done?
Next scene.
Okay. So we're going to follow Kim on our way to Gus's. Luckily, Mike swoops in before she can shoot anyone and grills her. And Gus smells a rat and leaves for the lavanderia.
Does make me wonder if anybody else showed up at this door. Do they bag him and gag him like they did with Kim? Like, is that just the procedure? Like, anybody shows up at this door, grab him.
I would think
so. And then how do you explain to a civilian? Oops. Like, what if this was a Girl Scout, right? Delivering cookies. Would they bag her and tag her?
I assume, because they have cameras on the door, that they just ignore it. I'm assuming Mike swooped in because she was pointing a gun right at the door.
You think it's above Lalo to use a Girl Scout to assassinate Gus? I don't.
No, but I do think a Girl Scout in the middle of the night would be far too obvious.
It'd be weird.
It would be weird.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, some jogger or something comes up to the door. I don't know.
Yeah.
How would they explain that to them? Well, we're just grabbing and abducting anybody, you know. We thought you were the pizza guy. What?
So you wanted to abduct a pizza guy?
Right.
There's more to the story.
Yep.
On the way to Gus's house, Kim pulls a classic Skylar White, which is to say she had the opportunity to tell the cops what was going on, and she chose not to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to blame her.
No, for sure.
Like, as far as she knows, she does that and Jimmy dies.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And Skylar was trying to protect her family and everything, too.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, while we were watching the episode the first time, you said something to the effect of, she's not going to tell these people that there's a bad man in her house. I'm like, well, that's what Skylar White did, too. Not tell anybody there was a bad man in her house.
Very true.
Yep.
She told the cops it was a bad man, but she wouldn't say why he was bad, and therefore they couldn't do anything.
Yeah. She gave them nothing.
Yep.
Less than nothing. At some point, at the end of the scene, once Kim is in place in Gus's house, sitting by herself, Gus realizes that, or he thinks he realizes, he makes a connection that it probably didn't matter who was sent on this terrible errand, and if it didn't matter, then it was a distraction.
Yeah. A little bit before that happens, Kim is being questioned by Mike to try and figure out what's happening here. And I love the moment. They'd still sneak in small comedic moments every now and then, even in a very tense episode. And I love it when Mike says, you know, what were you who did he tell you to kill, or what did he tell you to do? And she looks around and she points at the nerdy glasses wearing dude and says to shoot him. And it's the body double, obviously, but it's hilarious to me.
Obvious, yeah. Yeah, the dollar store Gustavo Fring.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, it was good. That was definitely a laugh out loud moment.
So there's also the moment where Kim's walking up to the door, which I forgot to talk about, which is very reminiscent of the scene in Breaking Bad where Walter is going to do the same thing, right? He's going to walk up and shoot Gus in the face.
Right, that's his grand plan.
Right. And he gets warned off by Mike, who calls. And I want to say Mike just says don't to him or something like that, which was very reminiscent to me of what happens in this series in like season 3 or whatever, when Mike is going to kill Hector with the sniper rifle in the desert, and Gus leaves a note on his car that just says don't.
Yep.
I feel like there's all this rhyming in this show, right? And these weird reflections of things that have happened before. And that's part of what makes it so rich and interesting. I don't know if it's there for me to connect and intentional, but my brain's doing that.
Yeah, for sure. And it gives us that much more to talk about, which is useful.
True.
Do we have anything else for this scene?
I do like how smart they're showing Lalo to be. You know, Kim says here, where were you? Right? I thought you were following me. And then it kind of hits home. Oh, right. Mike had to pull all his guys off of the non-essential targets, right?
Because they're being spread too thin.
And that was after Lalo had revealed himself to Hector and at the same time knowingly revealed himself to Gus.
Yeah.
So that Gus would make a move. Right. All the guys got pulled off Kim, all the unimportant targets. It turns out that actually wasn't a super important target. Mm-hmm. He just didn't realize why it would be. And now Lalo is outsmarting them again by getting their guys to get to off the laundromat so that he can sneak in. It's like, I really love, and we'll get there later on, but I really love how Lalo's like on the fly sort of planning and in the moment thinking is going up against Gus's pre-planning.
Well, yeah, he's using chaos to his advantage.
Yes.
Which is literally, yeah, like you said, exactly.
Gus hates chaos.
Yeah.
Gus, I mean, you can watch him fold a tie and go, this is a man who hates chaos.
Yes. Yes. So the rest of this episode really kind of does a little bit of cutting back and forth between, or at least this part of the episode, it cuts back and forth between the apartment and the laundromat.
Yeah, building that tension, that timing tension.
Exactly, that timing tension. So in this period, Mike and his crew show up at the apartment and they say, we don't want to spook the neighbors. And they all these men in black converge in the middle of the night.
Right.
Not a single apartment. They all go up the stairs.
Guns, reaching into their coats. Yeah.
Yeah. Very subtle. Very subtle. And after that, unless you have something to say about it, Gus goes to the laundromat.
Mm-hmm.
He has decided that that is where Lalo is. And he's right, because Lalo comes out of the shadows and shoots everybody but him.
Yeah, Gus smells crime. I love, you know, how the show is spooling all this out, right? Because, like, we've seen him go to the vent. We know that he got into the laundromat.
Right.
But watching Gus go through the process of figuring out what's going on here is intriguing to me, because the way they're shooting it, you know, they have this sound that's going off in the background that you can kind of hear.
It's very horror movie the way that they shoot this part of the scene.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's also, I think, interesting because, like, when they shoot Gus, they're shooting him from the side and you can mostly see, like, his ear.
Mm-hmm.
And you can almost see his ear twitch, right? When he hears the squeaky fan,
right?
You're looking at his ear as he hears it, and then he turns to the place where now the camera is filming from, and he looks at you almost. It's very good. I mean, the direction on this episode in particular, I think, is excellent, and a lot of the show is excellently directed.
It really is. It is also just so cool to see this character who ends up being like a little bit of his own boogeyman in Breaking Bad.
Sure.
This character is so scared in this moment. Like, he's actually scared.
Yeah.
In this moment and later, after the shooting stops.
Definitely. I couldn't help but think when Mike's guys are all, like, surrounding the building, Kim's apartment, they needed Nacho there. Because Nacho could just grab one of those downspouts.
Uh-huh. And just shimmy right up.
Yeah. Yeah, just Catman his way up those things.
Yep, just like a sewer
coming
rat.
Through the balcony door. That's the thing about the tension in this episode. On second watch, the first watch, it was extremely tense. And I'm like, okay, how are all these pieces going to time out just right so that Mike can be there to protect Gus? Mm-hmm. Turns out he's not there to protect Gus.
Yeah.
Actually, he hates that Gus went out on his own and did his detective work.
Yeah, he scolds him for it later.
Right. So on second watch, like, there's not all this tension that they're building is like a false tension because none of it comes to fruition, right? It doesn't right. need to be this intense timing thing because the timing doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it would matter, like, after the fact, if that 13 minutes or whatever that Lalo supposedly had a head start on him right. had expired, but it didn't. We didn't even get that far.
Yeah.
So none of it really matters, but it was still very tense.
It was tense, and it was just a scary situation all around. And we know, even knowing that Gus is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. He's bulletproof, basically.
And knowing
multiple
that
ways.
Jimmy is fine, too, because Lalo isn't in that apartment, right? Mm-hmm. All this is still very tense.
Yeah. It's wild. It's a good time.
I really liked Lalo just coming out and murdering all four guards with ease. That seems very Lalo. And then he makes a very controversial statement where he says, "It's a shame they don't make armor for your head." They do make armor for your head, Lalo.
It's called a helmet.
It's called a helmet, yeah.
What the hell? What? I didn't even... two watches. I didn't even catch that line. That's hilarious.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he knocks on his chest thing and says, "Do you rather make armor for your head?" You dip.
Wow. Yeah. What the hell? Just because you wouldn't wear it because it would ruin your hair doesn't mean other people wouldn't wear it.
Right.
Ugh. After putting down all of Gus's bodyguards, we cut back to Mike ungagging Jimmy and trying to get two key pieces of information out of him. But all he really gets is that Lalo left at the same time, basically as Kim, right after Kim left.
Yeah, which is better than I expected.
Yeah. And they just leave him there.
Sure, why not? Get more important things to do. I'm sure they left a guard. Yeah, a couple guards behind.
Yeah. So after he leaves there, well, okay, he leaves. And we cut back to Gus. Gus takes Lalo to the super lab site. He gets shot, takes a minute to tell the camera exactly what he thinks of the Salamancas, then executes his hidden gun plan.
Which nobody forgot that, right? Nobody forgot that there was
right?
a hidden gun down there. They made a point of showing us. I'm like, yeah, it's the number one thing on my mind. Thanks, show.
Yeah. That's literally the last time we saw this super lab was Gus planting a gun.
Yeah.
I spoke to someone today who was a casual watcher, and even he said that he did sort of vaguely remember.
Okay.
That.
Yeah, I didn't know if they were counting on us forgetting, but...
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard for us to say because we watch everything so many times.
Right.
We know exactly where everything is at all times.
I was wondering, Gus puts up a little bit of a fight here. You mm-hmm. know, he's pretty defiant when he says, you know, "You're going to take me to the super lab or whatever. Give me the tour."
Yeah.
And Gus, you know, turns and just looks at him. And then
that's why he gets shot.
Shoots him.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, it was his intention to take a bullet there, but is he putting up a fight here so Lalo won't think, oh, he's leading me into a trap?
Maybe. Or maybe, yeah, it could be both. It could just be that he fucking hates Lalo and he doesn't want to give him anything.
Sure. Yeah.
No, that's a good way to look at it, though. Because, yeah, if he was super eager to take him down there.
Right.
Lalo is
very smart.
Very intuitive. He has that kind of intuitive intelligence, which is why he can do stuff on the fly so well.
Yeah, and I love that because it's a different type of intelligence than Gus, right? Gus thinks about mm-hmm. everything, pre-plans everything, which, I mean, look at the gun, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously Gus's way of doing things worked out here. But yeah, I found it interesting having those two types of intelligences pitted against each other.
Yeah, I actually think it might be a little bit of a shame that we didn't get more of that. I don't know. It wouldn't have like served the story in any useful way, but just for pure entertainment value.
Right.
I would have liked seeing a little bit more of a cat and mouse between Lalo and Gus.
We get so much of that in Breaking Bad. Walt is kind of like that, right? He's not the pre-planner. He's the guy who takes a bad situation and goes, oh God, how do I get myself out of this?
The difference is that Walt has no charisma whatsoever. So I,
right.
He's so I still hate him. So I hate him no matter what. Lalo, like, I know he's a freaking monster, but he's also super charismatic. So somehow I don't hate him.
Yep.
Ugh.
Yeah, his line in the first scene that he's in this episode where he's like, your mouth, Dios mio.
it's so good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was an entertaining character to watch.
Speaking of Breaking Bad callbacks, this video that he's recording to Eladio reminds me a lot of the one that Walt was recording in the very first episode of Breaking Bad when he thinks the jig is up, the police are coming to get him.
Right.
He's outside like the burnt out RV or
it's in a ditch.
Chemical-bound RV. He's in his underwear. He's pointing what I think might even be the same exact model of camera. I can't remember at himself and like filming the video to his family.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was definitely one of those like recurring motif sort of moments.
Mm-hmm. How fitting. That Lalo would die with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
Laughing because he got outgotted by the chicken man.
Yeah. I feel like it's a very fatalist kind of look on life. He always struck me as not having a care in the world. He's whistling and singing and cooking. And
you can find the humor in all kinds of weird situations too.
Yeah.
Like all different kinds of humor. Sometimes black humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this situation. That was good. It was a good end to the character. I'm sad to see him go, but
yeah,
he went the right way, I think.
I think so.
And we were right.
I agree.
We were right. Under the super lab.
Yeah. I have all kinds of questions about that. Let's talk about that in the last scene there.
We got a couple more scenes to go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What about Gus? Calling Don Eladio a pimp.
A bloated, something bloated pimp. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
What?
Yeah, boy, he lets him have it.
Really,
huh?
Tore into him. Yeah, that was pretty good. It's another moment of catharsis.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of Walt telling his family he loves them. Everything I did was for you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Didn't. I feel like Jesse had a scene like that too in
there
Breaking
was,
Bad.
There was a tape that Hank got a hold of, off. I think. Oh, that he's telling somebody off?
Mm-hmm. And now I'm trying to remember exactly who it was that he was being so vehement about. Was it Walt?
I think it was Hank. I think after Hank beat him up.
Mm.
Well, he was saying it to Walt. Because Walt was visiting him in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Is this what you're thinking of? And Jesse has like these massive swollen face. It's horrible looking.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. That is what I'm thinking of. But I'm also, and this is me mixing characters' vibes. Because occasionally Nacho had a similar vibe to Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Nacho gets his tearing into the Salamanca's moment right before he dies too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He does.
Ended better for Gus than it did for Nacho.
Yep, definitely. I wonder where that tape is right now. We always wondered about the tape that Walt left in the desert.
Yeah.
If it would ever come back to him to bite him. It never did.
Never did.
I assume Gus is way too studious to let this tape go anywhere.
Oh, yeah, of course. No, that thing's destroyed.
I assume so. I wish they would have shown it being destroyed.
Well, we got 5 more episodes.
Maybe they showed Mike throwing the camera in the hole at very end of the episode. He throws a lot of stuff in. It was so dark, I couldn't really tell what it was.
Gotcha.
But I assume it was like guns and IDs and all that stuff.
Speaking of
probably camera
things that were and were not thrown into that hole, we'll get to that at that scene. But yeah, I've got questions.
Okay.
about some extra bodies.
Me too.
After watching Lala die laughing, we cut to Lyle opening Los Pollos for the morning. He gets his temporary marching orders on the phone call with Gus while Gus is getting patched up on the other end.
Yeah.
Pretty badass.
I love that. Actively operating on Gus while he's talking to Lyle. I love Lyle. He's just such an underling. He's just such a suck up wimp boy. I don't know what to call him.
Wow.
He's just a subservient cuck kid. Right?
Jeez. Not the words I use.
He has woken up, showered, shaved, gotten dressed, gone to work all before dawn. He's singing the Los Pollos theme song to himself.
That part's a little
as he walks
much.
Into work.
He's got a
he
Los
gets
Pollos
a phone call
dangler.
From his boss, and he says, it's dark outside. The sun hasn't even come up. He says, I'm not late, am I? Oh, shit. Oh, shit, am I late, Mr. Fring? Yeah, fuck, Lyle. Come on, man. Self-respect.
I don't know, man. If I had a boss like Gus and I saw some of the things that I saw that Lyle has seen, maybe I'd be a little bit scared, too. Maybe I'd be wanting to make sure that my T's were crossed.
I suppose. I don't know. And I love watching Lyle, but my God, man.
He is not in Breaking Bad.
What's he making? $9.25 an hour?
In what? 2000?
He's a manager.
Five, whatever.
Yeah, he's an assistant manager. He's not even the manager of the store.
Yeah, he's temporary manager now.
Pathetic.
I do, yeah, telling him that he has to open and close 2 days in a row. That's a little...
Offering to take him to the airport?
That part.
My God, Lyle.
This is how you know. This isn't filmed in Southern California. Because nobody wants to take anybody to LAX.
Oh, yeah. LAX is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my rant on Lyle closed.
I didn't know you had such strong feelings about the kid. I thought you were just kind of loyal.
I didn't know
What's
I did until this
loyalty,
episode
What's wrong with loyalty, Jim? Jeez.
Nothing. Just have some self-respect in your loyalty.
You ask me to do stuff, and I'm like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, you ask me to do stuff, too.
Does that make me a cuck?
No. I can't imagine if Lyle asked his boss, if he asked Gus to do anything, that Gus would do it. That's the problem. There's no mutual respect here. Lyle, he's not going to do anything for you.
It's true, and he's going to make you scrub a fryer.
Actually, I lie. I mean, Gus does treat him pretty well, right? He says, like,
he treats
I'll
all
make
his employees
the adjustment
pretty well.
To your time card.
He's super nice. Yeah, he tells him to
when I get back.
Make a new schedule for people so that they know what their schedule's going to be in advance. That's probably better than any fast food boss.
I know.
That actually
I
exists
kid.
In the world.
Like, Gus is actually a very good boss aside from the drug stuff. Yeah. And he treats his employees well. And he probably does indenture. Is that the word I'm looking for? A lot of respect.
Indenture?
Yeah. No, that's not the word I'm looking
it's
for.
It's not the word.
That's more like forced.
Yeah. It's a lot more like forced.
Yeah. What's the word? Not endear, not a...
I know.
Shit. Engender. Know. He engenders
Engender.
A lot of respect
you got it.
From his employees. So, like, yeah, I get it. Gus is a good boss, but man, if he wasn't singing the Los Pollos theme song, I wouldn't... I'm sorry. I got to keep going on this. The Los Pollos theme song is a bridge too far.
I don't think anybody likes their job that much, realistically.
No.
I don't think anybody is that, like... hoo-ah for their corporation that they're working for, right?
Look, to a certain degree, I understand, like, if they're playing the Los Pollos theme song all the time at work, maybe it's stuck in your head, maybe you have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, I worked at the electronics department in Walmart at the time where Ricky Martin was very popular.
Mm.
I have Livin' La Vida Loca stuck in my head to this day. But I never heard the Los Pollos theme song playing in that store.
That's
this
true.
Is his. He's probably playing it on a tape on the way to work.
Oh, man. Sad. No,
he
you're
might
right.
Have written it.
You're
I
right.
don't know.
I flipped.
This might be a song he made up.
It could be. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lose
let's...
my mind.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to cut back to the apartment where Jimmy is watching Mike's guys from the safety of the bathroom. Kim and Mike show up and Mike gives them the news story.
I have nothing to say about this scene.
You have nothing to say about refrigerators? Nothing.
Lyle has pushed all other information out of my head.
God. See, this, they did that to you. The editors did that to you.
The refrigerator, yes, that's horrible. I hate it with every fiber of my being.
As soon as I saw them take a shelf out of the fridge,
yep,
I was thinking, no, please, no.
You knew what
the
was
fridge,
coming.
I did. I told you they were going to take him out in that fridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant.
It's a great
idea.
A
brilliant way to get rid of a body. But
absolutely.
Also, God, how undignified.
What are you going to do? It's not a human at that point. It's a pile of meat.
Yeah.
Stick it in the fridge. Get it out of here.
I guess. It's not how Mike feels.
Right.
Mike still has some strong feelings about it.
Yeah. We'll see that at the end.
Mm-hmm. So this is where Mike takes the opportunity to stick the knife in a little bit with Kim and Jimmy and tell them, this was your story that you were building on, you were working on anyway, right? That he was coked out of his mind. Well, mm-hmm. Guess what? Now he was coked out of his mind and he committed suicide. There's the story.
Yeah. He says he's not coming back, which I laugh out loud at. if I'm Jimmy, like,
yeah,
you said that before, man. And this time, no, really, I mean it. He's not coming back. Sure. Sure thing.
Yeah. Why not? I have a bug at my butt now.
No.
Yeah. This line, the only reason that line was delivered that way and not him just telling him, I saw his body, he's dead,
mm-hmm.
was because Jimmy or Saul has the line in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
About Lalo and Ignacio. Because
this is the link, right?
Yeah, that's like, the link.
Mike said this once before,
mm-hmm.
and Lalo came back. And then Mike said this again. When is Lalo coming back? And that's been in his mind ever since. And so when
and that's why
he's
that
taken to the desert
like
with a bag on his head.
Again, yeah.
He assumes, yeah, it's Lalo.
Yep.
So now we know. Now we know. I think that's been the question, like the number one question on everybody's mind.
Sure. Why did he ask about Lalo?
Yes.
It's because he just didn't know for sure.
Yeah.
Apparently. I take slight issue with that because it's like a line that is serving the purpose of the plot and not what he would actually say in that moment. I think Mike would actually say in that moment, I saw his body. He's dead. You don't
Probably.
Have to think about it anymore.
Yeah. We're putting him in a hole.
But instead, he leaves it vague. Yeah. So, yeah, Jimmy's going to have that boogeyman in the back of his mind the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. I want to know when he shows up at the office at 9 o'clock or whatever, what is Francesca going to think about Jimmy's behavior? Because there's no way he walks in and acts totally normal, right?
No,
and Francesca
no,
is
could,
too observant.
She's too observant, for sure. He could act like Saul Goodman at the, you know, drop of a hat, no problem, but
sure.
Saul Goodman is not, you know, a person.
I guess that's one of the other things we need to see before this series ends fully is probably, like, where are the breadcrumbs to get Francesca from the nice lady she has been to the
the completely
cold,
disillusioned
yeah,
yeah,
over it woman that she is in Breaking Bad. I mean, we're definitely getting there. Like, the stuff we talked about with the decorating of the office is probably
yeah.
going to get her there alone. But
that's a lot. Yeah. Boy, that office looks different.
Yes.
In Breaking Bad.
And then all these calls to strange numbers where she's lying and the probably illegal stuff. Yeah. She'll get there. I guess I want to see a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect opportunity, right? He
mm-hmm.
acts a little weird. She starts to hear some things, you know, maybe overhears conversations with Kim, whatever.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know how much she would actually know about their association with, like, Hamlin's.
Yeah, probably not much.
Probably not much.
The other thing in this scene is there's another little mirror kind of thing happening here, reflection of, like, Jesse when he woke up and found Jane's body when Walt
mm-hmm.
let her die. The way Mike handles the situation, right? He sits
right.
Jesse down, who's distraught, who's shocked, can't can't even like form a sentence. He's like, I woke up, I found the body. That's all I know.
Yep.
And I woke up, I found the body. That's all I know. I need you to say it. Mm-hmm. And he does that again here with Kim and Jimmy, who were more responsive than Jesse was. He was gone.
Jesse was always like two bad things away from a breakdown.
So. Yeah. But it definitely reminded me of that moment.
Definitely. Yeah. I saw some of that on Reddit too. People saying that echoed that moment. So we find ourselves in the final scene. And we're with Mike and Tyrus as they oversee the group burial of Lalo and Howard in the foundation of the Super Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.
We knew it.
So sad. Yes, one, we knew it. I think we all knew Lalo was going to be under there. But two, Howard with him.
Yeah.
The dude who shot him, just in completely cold blood, and mm-hmm. he's going to have to rest next to him till the end of time. That's fucked up, man.
It's true.
It's messed up.
Yeah. It is pretty messed up. And Mike knows it, right? Mike pauses for a moment after they throw Howard's body into the hole. And I was trying to figure out why, because he doesn't really know Howard Hamlin. Mm-mm. Like, he doesn't have any personal connection to him at all.
He hates when people who aren't involved in the business get hurt by the business.
Yeah, innocence.
Yeah.
I think that's what's really bothering him.
He's not in the game.
Right. I can even see him actually knowing Howard slightly, right? He mm-hmm. was a parking lot attendant at the courthouse.
Yeah.
I'm sure Howard's been there numerous times. They must have met at least.
Yeah.
In passing. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's really about that. It's about this person got caught up in a game they didn't know they were playing.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
And he's brutally murdered. Not brutally, I guess. Is one of the gentler murders.
And I mean, that's just like the tip of the iceberg on the fallout here. Like Kim and Jimmy have to really reckon. Like, if Mike's standing over this whole reckoning with the death of an innocent,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what are they going to think? Because they brought Howard into this. They're not innocent.
They started the process. He wouldn't have been at their apartment.
Right.
If they hadn't been trying to take him down for money.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if Kim gets past that.
Yeah, maybe this is the thing that really messes her up forever. And what does that look like? We don't know.
Nope.
We're going to see. That'll be interesting. There was a shot early on in this episode where we are seeing Kim through the cameras in Gus's house. Mm-hmm. And she's like looking up at the camera, but we can't really see her face. It's just super grainy.
Yeah.
And the shot just lingers there for a moment before it moves on to something else. And that almost felt like a little bit of foreshadowing for me.
Hmm.
Like, she is going to be in another room with a camera pointed at her face at some point before this is over, I think.
Another room with a camera?
With a camera pointed at her face, yeah.
Like?
Either an interrogation room or...
Okay.
Yeah, something about that felt... I don't know. It made my
ominous.
It made me, yeah, it's just, it was ominous. Fine. Yeah. It made my spidey sense tingle a little bit.
Sure.
And the fact that it was so granulated, we couldn't see her face. She doesn't exist in Breaking Bad, even though she is so important to Jimmy.
Right.
And Jimmy is so important to her. They're really driving that home this episode.
Yeah, we got another 5 episodes to figure it out.
Rough.
There's one thing I know you wanted to talk about with these bodies.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe it was just in service of the shot, which really, again, it really bothered me seeing Howard and Lalo in that hole together, just like jumbled legs and stuff. That really bothered me. But what about the other 4 guys that he shot?
Right.
Where they go? Is it a different hole? And why?
Why not bury them down here as well?
Yeah.
Like, it's the safest thing to do. They died in the laundromat. Just take them downstairs. My only guess is...
Is there a different procedure for when mercenaries get killed?
Surely not. I mean, you still have to get rid of the body, right?
I would think so, yeah. It's like you can explain it away.
No. So, yeah, I don't know. My guess is maybe they're going to dig some more holes after they buried these two, but who knows?
Seems like a waste of a good hole to me.
Yeah, just dig it a little bigger. Why do you need to dig discrete holes for each pair?
Yeah, maybe that's the rule. Toodle a hole.
Sure.
No more, no less.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Then there's the post credits, which I talked about. I don't know if it's a post credit sequence or if it's a next time on.
Yeah, yeah. I know what usually happens is it will roll into on the next episode, and it didn't really do that. This time it just had that black and white teaser of the Cathedral of Justice.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if that's part of the episode or if that's, I mean, it's after a credit, but not after all the credits.
Yeah. I don't know. I really have no idea. It feels like a teaser to me.
Yeah, me too.
But that's it.
All right. Well, we have a bunch of feedback. Not a bunch. We have the feedback you'd expect from the first week back on the show. And only 2 days since the thing has aired.
Hmm.
I'm sure we'll have a lot more next week, but let's go over some feedback.
Let's do it.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Start off with X the Eliminator, which sounds like somebody you hire to take out Lalo. Episode 8 was one of the best episodes of TV I've seen in a long time. The shootout at the end was amazing. Vince is a great director. Oh, shit. Was this directed by Vince Gilligan?
That explains it.
Oh, was this directed by Vince Gilligan?
Oh, and we didn't know that. Oops.
Yes, it was directed by Vince Gilligan. He is a great director. I don't think anybody would dispute that. He also says Tony Dalton is a hell of an actor. Yes. Mm-hmm. No one will dispute that either. If they were to spin off another show, who would you like to see it mainly focus on? I actually prefer the Gus / Mike story, side story in Better Call Saul, so I'd love another series with two main running stories in it. But it was the only, it was only around one character. I think a Lalo series could be really good. I agree. I think a Lalo series would probably be the best out of any of the characters remaining.
A Lalo series, or I'd even take a Gustavo back in
Chile.
No, back in the city where something apparently terrible happened, and then he left. It's like his, it's part of his dark backstory.
That was in, do I have to say it, Chile every time? That was back in Chile.
Was he?
So he was part of the Pinochet regime, apparently, which they talk about it briefly in Breaking Bad. That's one of the things I'm kind of disappointed we never really heard anything about, and I think it's kind of too late to hear much about it. Unless the Juan Bolsa stuff comes in, I don't know. We never get a good background on him. You know, there's the stuff when he was a kid with the Coati.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, I had that question. What did he do during the Pinochet regime? What was he... it felt like he was on the run from his past, and we haven't really got any information about that.
Yeah, that's what makes me think there's... There could be a little bit more there to explore if they felt like doing so. I'm sure
you're right.
Everyone involved in this, most of the people involved are pretty, like, over.
I would cast the guy who plays Ernie as Gus.
The guy who plays Ernie.
Yeah, the assistant.
Oh, yeah.
To...
Okay, boy, I had to really roll it back there. Yeah.
The guy with the car.
Sure. Uh-huh. He's too tall, isn't he?
you just shoot him short. Shoot him short. Anyway, yeah, I think Lalo would be a great other sequel, prequel, spinoff if they wanted to do it, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Character. Do they have the passion for it, right?
Right. Do they have the de-aging technology for it?
I mean, ultimately, what's going to make it good is if the writers and everybody involved is really invested in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been doing this for almost two decades now in the Breaking Bad universe. How many years can you spend on one property and still feel fulfilled?
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm saying. If I had spent this long, well, if I spent like 3 months on something, I'd be pretty much over it. But, but especially two decades, yeah, I think I'd be ready to move on to something else. But
yeah,
I'm not them, so... I don't know.
Neither am I. All right, Rinaldi says, Lalo is dead, therefore the cartel plotline is over. Howard is dead, so that means the Saul and Kim attorney plotline is over. So where do we go from here? Are we finally going to get a Gene episode, and will we switch over from black and white to color? What is Kim going to do after witnessing Howard's death? Will she continue her dream of a full-fledged pro bono law practice, or will she run back to Nebraska or go to parts unknown? What will change Jimmy's motivation to be all in on the money and look for a golden goose client, which ends up being Walter White instead of Kim's well-being? So many questions I have, and yet only five episodes left to answer them. I guess the saying is true, when two plot lines close, three more open.
So we have Sandpiper that we need to settle first.
Right? I want to see how Cliff reacts to all this.
Yeah, we need to know where that money's going, and we need to know what happens to Kim, because that is, at this point, I feel like that's just about the only thing that makes sense, that he is going to lose Kim. And when he loses Kim, he loses his last remaining touchstone to, like, morality or decency. He has no reason to give a shit about anything anymore.
Yep. It does feel like that. And then, of course, I want to see more Gene stuff.
Yeah,
I want to see the true ending of this story.
Exactly.
Because it's clear it's not over yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see.
All right, well, let's move on to Reginald D., who I think has some problems with this episode.
Ooh.
He describes it as ginger ale that's lost its carbonation. The writers of Point and Shoot left us with an episode that is tasty to some degree, but is mostly bland. The tastiest part was when Jimmy immediately goes into Shyster Saul mode and talks Lalo into keeping him hostage while letting Kim go. It was also good that they tied up the Howard and Lalo storylines and didn't drag them out needlessly. But those were the few refreshing waves in an otherwise ocean of tedium. How many times have we seen Lalo outwit Mike and his guys? Lalo makes Mike look like a blind man in a dark room, a blind man looking in a dark room for a black cat that's not even there. The main problem with Point and Shoot is not with its predictability. This is a prequel, so a certain amount of predictability is baked into the very fabric of the story, and that's all right. Everyone knew the ship was going down, but millions still flocked to see Titanic. What's bad is that at times the writing was uninspired and bordering on lazy. The most egregious example is the final showdown between Gus and Lalo. We know that Gus has hidden a gun in the super lab, but even with that knowledge, there is a certain amount of suspense present. Will Gus get to the gun in time? If Gus shoots Lalo, will he kill him or just wound him? But when Gus does his cheap imitation of the brilliant soliloquy Nacho gave before he died, it took all the fizz out. By doing this, we knew exactly what was going to happen next. Gus is surely going to kill Lalo now. It was like the writers thought they could recreate that, how special that moment was when Nacho took back ownership of his life. But while Nacho's speech was soul-stirring, Gus's blatant ripoff was stomach-turning. Maybe if Gus had used his own vocabulary and the natural inflection of his own voice, it would have been more meaningful. Copying the vulgarity and speech pattern of Nacho was beneath him and insulting to us as an audience. Even though it was a ruse to keep Lalo distracted, it still seemed forced and was off-putting. To be fair, perhaps the writers were trying to show us how clever Gus is by him even using the effective techniques of his enemies. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you and I felt pretty differently about this episode. I thought it was pretty good. I knew,
yeah,
I mean,
totally.
Even though things played out more or less the way that we thought they were going to, I don't think that's always a bad thing. They managed to, like we talked about before, they maintained the tension. The acting was A+, spot on. Some of the best, I think, that we've seen even in this season of the show.
Yeah, I agree. I like the moments where we see Gus's facade break. There's a lot of rage in that guy, and he does very well to hide it most of the time. But when it cracks through, you get kind of a truer image of the guy, right?
Yeah, his tirade, I guess you could call it, didn't really feel like he was trying to imitate anybody. It felt like he was just trying to tell Lalo exactly what he thought of him before he took him down.
Yeah, and I take your point. It's definitely not the character that we see most of the time. Vulgarity does seem beneath him, but I don't know. He calls these people dogs, right? He has a very personal vendetta against the Salamancas.
Yeah, we know just based on the history. I guess it's helpful to know all of the Breaking Bad stuff too, because that gets more into the background with Max and everything. But we know that he fucking hates the Salamancas. So him essentially saying that he fucking hates the Salamancas to a Salamanca's face is not really too far beyond the pale for me, but I can totally see.
The other thing about it is, like, yeah, if it takes the fizz out when you know that Gus is going to kill Lalo now, like, you always knew Gus was going to kill Lalo, or if you didn't know Gus was going to kill Lalo, you at least knew that this tape was never making it to Don Eladio.
Yeah, because it couldn't
from the start, from when he's outside in the sewer, like, filming, you know.
Yeah.
It's
we know that make the, it to him. Yeah, we know the super lab continues apace.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's why I say it was sort of a, it's kind of a magic trick what they do with this episode, because all of the tension is like a red herring in this. All that timing stuff doesn't mm-hmm. matter, because Gus is going to be mano a mano with Lalo by the end. And no Jimmy. One's going to be around. No one's timing it out to save him.
Right. Jimmy didn't need to talk him into sending Kim instead.
No.
That whole scene was unnecessary.
He didn't need to. He was at the apartment alone. It wasn't mm-hmm. like, oh, we have to sneak in and save Jimmy somehow. We already knew that. Like,
right.
All that tension is created with the way that this episode is just directed.
In the shooting techniques.
Yeah.
Just cutting back and forth between things, the music, the lighting, the way the shots are framed.
And we didn't talk really about cool. it, but that shot where Gus and Lalo are shooting at each other, like he kicks the mm-hmm. cable, the lights go out, he runs over the gun. I mean, it happens so fast, and it's filmed in complete darkness with the only light being the gun shots.
Yeah.
I thought that was stylistically just brilliant. It looked amazing.
It did, and it sounded good too, because even not having any visuals, you could tell that Gus is fucking terrified because he's still shooting that right, gun. Right. And also you can tell that he doesn't get his hands dirty very often because he is still dry firing the gun.
Yeah. And Reginald, I don't know if maybe you like that portion of it better, because that is like a Gus I would think of from Breaking Bad, the very poised mm-hmm. Gus, and the way that you show the facade cracking there is like he's still pulling the trigger, right? It's not flashy, it's not him cursing, it's just him click, 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 click.
It's him not being completely present in the moment.
Exactly.
He's more in his brain than he is in the moment.
So, I don't know. I think there's definitely, I can see why people, you know, like Reginald here might have a problem with it mm-hmm. Because it is not his normal demeanor, certainly. But yeah. I don't know. I didn't quite have that problem. He also has an issue with Kim, which I don't know. This one might be more valid. It's hard to say. Maybe we can talk about it. He says, Kim used to be Wonder Woman, but the writers of Point and Shoot turned her into Lois Lane, waiting for Superman to save her. Kim is a whimpering mess the whole episode. Mike said she was made of sterner stuff than Jimmy. And all season long, we've seen her masterfully orchestrate Howard's downfall. But in this episode, she's barely recognizable. At times, the scenery of this episode looked like a horror movie. It seems as though the writers wanted to turn Kim into the stereotypical blonde screaming her head off until Freddy, Jason, or in this case, Lalo, chops it off. Was she threatened to gunpoint by a murdering psychopath? Yes. But so were Jimmy and Gus. They were still cool and calculating, while Kim is barely able to function. Her brain is so scrambled that she was actually going to kill someone on Lalo's orders? This is not the resilient, super intelligent, resourceful Kim that has been sold to us previously. Perhaps, though, this is making a mountain out of a molehill, and Kim's reactions were totally understandable under the circumstances. What do you think?
I think there's a lot going on in Miss Wexler's brain from the moment that Lalo shows up at their apartment, because she's the only one who knew that he was still alive, and she didn't say shit about it. So there's that going on in the back of her brain. There's a lot of, I feel like, emotional subtext happening. Which, yeah, you could say, they're making a woman emotional. Like, yeah, fine. But also, this is just a very emotional moment. And Jimmy is not holding together. He is falling back into his persona.
Yeah.
That's not holding together. That's just another kind of trauma response.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Jimmy is... I don't know. So he does go into the salesman mode. I think that is like, and that's as close as you get to being cool and calculating in this moment, right? It's mm-hmm. like realizing I don't want her to be in the situation. I'm going to try and get her out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kim has a much closer relationship with Howard. Let's not forget that, right? Like mm-hmm. for Jimmy, Howard is a guy that's thwarted him at every turn, and he hated the guy for a long time.
He wanted him out of his way, yeah.
Right.
To stop bugging him.
And so it's not quite the event here to Jimmy that it is to Kim. Like she, like you said, she knew this was a possibility because Lalo was still alive. She mm-hmm. knew that. She didn't tell Jimmy. Howard got killed because of it right in front of her.
Yep.
He was bleeding out on the floor. I would probably be a blubbering mess too if I had just accidentally gotten someone killed and had a gun in my face.
The fact that she was even able to drive all the way over there and go up to that door.
I guess everybody has a line, right? A breaking point. And Kim, you're right. Kim has been very cool. She's been the coolest, most resourceful and intelligent person in the show in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I thought the performance was excellent, but was it within her character? I don't know.
Could go it's debatable. A little bit either way. Yeah. I guess we could compare it to the first time that Lalo shows up in their apartment.
Oh, and right.
She was very shaken at that point too, but she wasn't so shaken that she couldn't talk her way out of it. I'm trying to remember if he, well, I'll say this. He hadn't just shot somebody in front of them.
No.
In that scene. So maybe there's your difference.
And he was menacing them. He was asking Jimmy, tell me about the thing again.
But he wasn't like literally pointing a gun at anybody.
I don't think so. I think he was just sitting on the couch with them.
I mean, I think he, you know, had the gun in his waistband or whatever, but he wasn't
sure
pointing it at anybody. And again, he hadn't just killed her former right. boss of right. like 10 years.
That changes a lot when yeah. you realize it's the difference between thinking someone might be willing to kill you
and
knowing for a fact that they will kill you
and have no problem with it, whatever, and smile afterward and make jokes and be a monster, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you try to put yourself in that situation and you realize that you're in the presence of like at least a little bit of a sociopath.
Oh, yeah.
That changes things because you think to yourself that, oh, maybe this person can't actually be reasoned with. Where before she thought he was more normal, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I always give a benefit of a doubt to somebody that I'm meeting for the first time that they are. And maybe it's wrong. Maybe it's not even something I should do, but that they are more like me than not. And he has just proved that he's nothing like them. He is a true monster. And
yeah. Yeah. His rationality is his own, variety of rationality.
Yep.
For sure.
All right. Let's move on to John H. says, not a deep observation, but I appreciate how well they fleshed out the characters. I love how when Lalo is getting Jimmy's car so he can go to the super lab and he discovers it's a beige Taurus, he gives Jimmy this brief look of disappointment in the choice of cars. Yes.
Everybody's always giving him shit for that car. And you know what? He deserves it.
Well, not to relitigate the past, but what does Lyle drive?
Oh, I don't know. Some sedan. Something.
Yeah, I'm sure it's basic. A real piece of shit. All right, probably. Let's move on. Tom W. says, great episode, but I had two questions about character motivations. Here's some Kim stuff. Why would Kim risk trying to kill an unknown man who was likely powerful, armed, and dangerous versus bringing in cops? If Lalo can't kill this guy, it's hard to imagine Kim would expect to come out of this plane alive. I think it comes down to she thought Jimmy was dead if she went to the cops.
Mm-hmm.
That simple.
Yeah, loyalty to Jimmy.
I mean, you know, she's got an hour. If she gets out there and 15 minutes in says, hey, cops, there's a guy in my apartment. I don't know. Because it's a tough thing, right? Like, what are cops going to do? Cops are going to go surround the house. They're going to announce, hey, we know you're in there. Come out.
Mm-hmm.
And if Lalo is in there, he's going to kill Jimmy.
Yeah. He'll have plenty of time to kill Jimmy and get out. Him. Totally.
Anyway, number two, why would Lalo think Gus would expose his super lab at gunpoint? Without the lab, Lalo can't justify killing him. So from Lalo's perspective, he should have expected a stalemate.
I don't know. It seems like Lalo thought he'd won at this point. That's why he was being so cheeky with the camera and everything. He thought he had him. He calls Gus a house cat. Whenever he says that, when he's explaining who Kim or Jimmy is going to go shoot, he calls him a house cat. A house cat that can scratch, but still just a house cat. And it's a fundamental misunderstanding of Gus's character.
Yeah. Pretty big house cat. Scratched his neck open.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a question, right? What do they value more? Their life or not giving you the information that you want?
Right.
And I don't know. He shoots Gus. He can still look around, try and find the place himself. And I think it just comes down to Gus doesn't want to die. Gus doesn't want to die, and he knows that Lala will shoot him to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Gus knows he has one more trick up his sleeve.
Therapist Tom says, I love this episode, but two things are throwing me off. Why would Lalo keep Jimmy alive if his plan was to use Kim as bait and never come back to that apartment? I know he says, I have questions for you, which presumably is why we are supposed to believe he's keeping him alive, but clearly his plan was to get Gus at the lab. He knew Mike was going to the apartment, so there's no way he was going to get back there. Hmm. Is it because he just doesn't care? If he gets Gus and he records the super lab, he's got what he actually wanted, yeah. And Jimmy's a nobody.
He's laser focused on his goal. I guess that's how we could explain it away.
Yeah. I don't know. That one's a bit more questionable to me. Like, why not just shoot Jimmy in the head and leave?
No, that's a pretty good point.
They try to lampshade it a little bit, but I don't know that it fully covers the bulb.
Sure.
All right. Was Gus, number two, was Gus's plan to intercept Lalo at the lab? He sniffed out that Kim was bait, but then walked right into the trap, which doesn't make sense unless he thought he could beat Lalo there. Even then, why wouldn't he send guys there to sweep the place rather than leave the safest place in Albuquerque? I mean, he brought four dudes with him. Those four dudes just got handled, though.
Yeah, he didn't come completely unprepared. The only thing he didn't have was Mike.
I mean, it was his plan, right? I mean, why plant the gun? Why tamper with the power? He fully expected some kind of confrontation in the super lab. He knew that's where Lalo was going eventually.
Yeah, he knew it's what he wanted.
Yeah.
Because that's where he'd been sniffing around. I mean, he said, just practically said as much on the phone with Hector.
Yeah, and that's why all the stuff where he, like, figures out what Lalo's up to right away makes sense, because he's thinking, how would Lalo get to the super lab? Mm-hmm. How will Lalo get to the super lab that whole time?
Yep.
All right, James says, my only reason for writing this week is to ask if you or any of your listeners know what those powder blue shoes are that Lalo wears. I don't even want to know so I can buy a pair. I'm just genuinely curious what those are. Loafers? Slippers? Are they an expensive brand? Cheap? Does anyone know what those are?
They're not Crocs. I can tell you that much.
I thought they were Crocs at first. I was like, my God.
Have some dignity.
Right? You're gonna hassle Jimmy over his beige Taurus, but then
taupe Taurus,
then wear bright blue Crocs? I don't think so, man. Not getting away with that. No, they're some kind of like loafer boat shoe.
Still don't match the outfit, so they're still in poor taste.
Right? I thought he was a better dresser than that, but
thought it was due.
What do I know? Sorry, we don't know. Maybe some of our listeners know exactly what those are. Cy writes in, says, fear the worst for Gus's men when he took the equivalent of Star Trek's red shirts with him to the super lab. Yeah. In amongst the many Breaking Bad Easter eggs was this, and here's my question. At this point, we were crying foul on Vincent Peters' claims that they didn't have this entire story planned out when Breaking Bad was written. Because if this line is about Howard Lalo's bodies, and he's talking about a scene from Breaking Bad season 5 episode 1 where Hank says after the super lab blows up, Hank and Gomi are looking around and they say there are two bodies there.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's utterly convinced that they've had it all written from the start. It's too perfect to fit a line from 10 years ago.
I think you're forgetting that there were two like security guys there. Those were the two bodies.
Yes. And Walt shot them before he blew up the lab. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Sorry. Those are not the bodies you're looking for.
It would have been amazing if that was true and that they had pre-written or fleshed out the ideas or strip mine the past, because they love to do that. Yeah. They're like, oh, how can we get two bodies down there? Because we had this line.
Sure. But they needed to. They would have needed an excavator when they were going through that lab after it was blown up, because they were deep.
Explosion like that.
They were down there deep.
Not sure.
Would have been under like the flooring, all that stuff.
Oh yeah. And finally, Josh says the movie showing when Lalo turns on the TV before he leaves Jimmy and Kim's apartment is the 1950 Born Yesterday. I think this might be the same film that was playing last episode.
It had to have been, yeah, because this is the same.
Right, they were watching it. They turned it off.
Yeah, they paused it.
So I guess this is just another angle on how this might fit what we've seen. But it's Born Yesterday. In the film, Harry marries Billy, at least in part, so Billy can't be compelled to testify against him in court. Later, Harry signs much of his assets over to Billy, not knowing she's fallen in love with another man. Billy agrees to give back the assets to Harry little by little, so long as he agrees to leave her and her new love interest alone. I doubt there's any predictive value here, and I certainly can't see Kim finding another love interest in the next 4 or 5 episodes.
No, not another love interest, certainly. No. But eking out money over time.
Yeah, he says, but we know the BCS folks don't just pick background movies like this randomly, and there are some interesting parallels. And Jimmy does have a lot of money coming his way pretty soon. Any thoughts? Yeah, you're probably right. It probably doesn't have much predictive power on Kim, but I don't know.
It's a
Sometimes
fun.
I just like movies.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun echo of them. Kim and Jimmy only really got married, so they can't testify against each other.
Yep.
That's There's a lot of there. Money involved soon, maybe.
Maybe Jimmy will sign over all of that Sandpiper money to Kim as like a, I got you into a life I didn't mean to get you into, parting of ways at the end.
Maybe. We have no
Just
idea.
See her off with a suitcase full of cash.
I did notice, in terms of like where Kim is in Breaking Bad, whenever the vacuum repairman tells him that he's going to Nebraska, Jimmy is surprised, or Saul is surprised. He's like, Nebraska? What's in Nebraska? It's not like, ah, oh, Nebraska, you know? So.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that has to do.
See
like
my
Kim,
own flame.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much Kim being from there actually is going to play into anything.
Right. It's almost like she's not going to Nebraska. That almost confirms that she doesn't go to Nebraska after this.
Yeah. Because he, again, is like, there's nothing in Nebraska. What the hell?
Maybe she goes to the great Nebraska in the sky, where we all go eventually.
I don't want to have to live out the rest of my spiritual existence in a cornfield.
It's forever.
In a cornfield?
In a Cinnabon made for two.
What's in a cornfield? In a Cinnabon made for two. Oh my God. You need a nap. You're silly today.
That's it. We're done. Fuck you, Lyle. We're going out like that.
Fuck you, Lyle, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to send us more feedback, you can do so at bcs@baldmove.com. That's Better Call Saul, just the letters bcs@baldmove.com. We will be considering all feedback next week that we can, because if you couldn't tell, we didn't get much feedback, and this was already a long feedback section. So we're going to have to cut a lot of it. But please do send it in, especially if you know where those loafers can be had or whatever they are. And I guess, yeah, we'll see you guys next week. We've only got 5 episodes left. Get to the very end of this thing. It almost doesn't feel real at this point.
It's been going so long.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I just want to keep going, but I know it won't. I know it can't.
And it wouldn't serve anybody any good if it did.
No. The show would eventually get bad.
It would. That's what happens to all shows that are on for too long.
Looking at you, AMC. This one's pushing it, you know? I feel like 5 is a great number for a show, 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. This one's going on 6. I feel like 7 is where you really risk ruin.
Yeah.
So good time to get out. And I think based on what I've saw this episode, they're going out on a high note.
They are. They're wrapping things up very well and very interestingly.
Yeah, but we'll talk more about it next week.
We shall.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you then.
See you then. Are you Jim? I'm Alexis.